Hey listeners, it's Joe. Before we head into today's episode, which is one of our favorites, I want to make an announcement about our very special guest. On this episode, you're going to hear Sarah, myself, and one of my dearest friends, Jessica Berger-Vitalo. Now, at the time we recorded this about 3 weeks ago, Jess was very pregnant, and being a private person, she didn't want to talk about it on the episode. However, with her permission, I have the honor to announce that on September 14th, Jessica Berger-Vitalo gave birth to her second son, Chandler Rain Vitalo, and the baby and mom are doing well. The entire family is home enjoying each other, and we are so happy for them. Congratulations, Jess. Congratulations, Chandler. Welcome, and enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Sibling Sit Down, where brother and sister talk about the beloved New Jersey Mafia hit TV show, The Sopranos. I'm Sarah Stefanelli.
And I'm Joseph Stefanelli. We're going to be taking you through The Sopranos one episode at a time, one podcast episode at a time.
We will be discussing Proshai Lavushka with our special guest, Jessica Berger-Vitalo. Welcome, Jess.
And thank you for having me.
Woo! We're so happy you're here. Are you pumped?
I'm excited.
Jess, we've planned this, I think, since we were done with season one, right? We talked about this was the episode you were coming on for.
Yep. So, Jess, before we dive into this, what is your relationship with the show?
And us.
And us. But more so the show.
Which is going to end up being more about you guys anyway. But I'm from Jersey. I lived in Jersey. I grew up in Jersey. And as most New Jerseyans watch The Sopranos, like everybody else, got HBO for The Sopranos. Didn't watch Sex and the City, watched The Sopranos. And my relationship to you guys, oh my gosh, I think I figured this out with Joe the other day. 1998 is when I first officially met Joe.
When was... Wait, that's sooner than I think in my head. Didn't you guys meet in high school?
No, before high school.
No way. I never, ever knew that. And I've known you for my whole life practically. So when did you meet?
I was singing the national anthem at Brick National at a game. And Jess was the score taker. So we were in the booth together and she was flirting with me because she liked my singing voice so much.
I had never heard a boy who could sing that was like that close in age.
That's adorable.
And then he dated one of my good friends at the time for a very long time.
That is adorable. And everyone, Jess also has one of the best singing voices I've ever heard.
So, I've had the honor of being her co-star many times in shows. She's an amazing voice.
That is so much fun.
She was the cutest little thing in a little uniform.
Little tiny thing running around, just getting in the way. Okay, Joseph, what is your summary?
Meadow has truly been enjoying herself at Columbia, having now met a new friend, Noah, in her film studies class. Tony can see a budding romance between the young Jewish African-American man and Meadow and tries to put a stop to it immediately. Meanwhile, Tony is concerned about his own mother testifying against him in court, but quickly learns he doesn't have to worry, because Livia, the matriarch of The Sopranos, dies of a massive stroke. But what are you going to do? The cast of characters comes together, not only to mourn the loss of Livia Soprano, but to say goodbye to one of the most compelling characters in this tense and character-driven episode. This episode aired on March 4th, 2001, as did the previous episode.
Is it doubleheader?
This was a doubleheader. So we mentioned in the previous episode, but I didn't want to say why, but now I can say why. So this is the only time it happened that episode one and two of the season premiered on the same night, because Nancy Marchand passed away the day after or 2 days after the season two finale. So they immediately knew this was going to be a thing, and David Chase wanted to kill her character off with dignity and give her an episode, but they felt like doing it in the first episode would have been too classless, but HBO was like, no, we need this handled because everyone's going to wonder. So they said, we'll meet you halfway. We'll just do both episodes as the season premiere event. So this was the only time in the history of The Sopranos that happened. And I think it was a very good way of handling it.
Really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. What was on after The Sopranos that they were like, hey, listen, this is just more important than your show? So we're just going to put two of them.
It was probably the season premiere of another show. And they were just like, your show's just going to start a week later. Like, because you know why that show didn't give a shit? Because its lead-in was The Sopranos.
If I was a TV show and HBO picked me up, or I was an HBO show and I was like, what's my placement? And they're going to be like, after The Sopranos, I'm like, fuck yeah, whose dick do I got to suck to get that time slot? That's so great.
Oh my God. Oh my God. All right. So did we like this episode?
I love this episode.
I love this episode.
I think this episode could have just been the wake, burial, and the repast, and then nothing else could have, like, we could have just watched those.
Yep.
Nothing else really needed to occur. The Noah thing is like, whatever. Like, that could have happened in another episode if they really wanted to go with that storyline. And yeah, what
it's
else an happened?
Ongoing storyline. It's a pretty important storyline for Meadow this season, I have to say. I think this is Meadow's best season, I think, personally. Yeah. As an actress, I think this is Jamie Lynn's best. I think this all is a really good season. This episode, ironically, gets a lot of crap. It's usually in everyone's low 10, like when you read rankings.
Why?
What?
I don't know why. People don't like this episode.
Are they not paying attention?
Well, no one dies. Well, I guess no one gets whacked. I mean, obviously someone dies, but
yeah, I was going to say the whole thing, someone dies.
You know, I guess it's very drama. It's very character driven and it sets up a lot of stuff for the season, but I guess in reality.
The scene when they are at their house. It's just, okay, so like, can we just dive in? I mean, that's my favorite scene.
It's my favorite scene as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that even comes close to watching all of those characters together in that room, number one.
It's not AJ and Meadow talking about On the Snowy Evening by Robert Frost.
that scene needs to get cut. How many, this is a question for you guys, how many scenes are there actually in The Sopranos where every character is talking, but they're all listening to each other? Like, there's so many different funeral ones where everyone has side conversations, but I feel like this is one of the only scenes in the entire series where everyone is in one room, but everyone gets a focal point.
Yeah. And everyone's listening.
Yes.
A part of the same scene, essentially.
Yes,
in the same
it's
conversation.
All one big, beautiful scene.
There is an intervention scene that's very famous later in the series that is probably the only one that would compare to this. But I've heard the actors say that very often it was funerals. When someone died, they liked it because they all got to do scenes together.
I have a question that just made me think of this, Jess. I guess she can't go because of the confidentiality, but Melfi didn't go to the wake to be like, I'm so sorry. That your mom?
Absolutely.
No, I have comments about why she really doesn't say anything and say sorry. She doesn't say sorry about your mom at all on purpose. She purposely doesn't because that she's the problem. She is Tony's biggest problem. Yeah. And if you go to like everything is about this episode, especially, it's the motherhood thing. If anyone else died, if anyone else got sick, Melfi would literally say, how do you feel about that? I'm so sorry to hear that. How does that make you feel? Instead, she just stood there and let him just spout because she can't really pass judgment on the mom because she's the mom's the one who fucked them all up.
Yeah. And it is awkward when she sits there and just lets and stares at him. It's awkward because he's like, nothing. He calls her out. Yeah, and she just goes, she didn't say it out loud, but you know, she tried to kill you. So I don't really have sympathy for this woman. You know?
But I love what Tony says. He says exactly what the audience is saying. So I guess we're done. She's dead. Because I'm sure the audience did think to themselves, are we going to therapy anymore? Like, what's the point now?
Oh, interesting. I didn't think
that. But we did have
that.
To keep therapy alive. And I think they do a brilliant job. Spoiler alert. They do a beautiful job keeping therapy alive.
Very interesting. So that's not any of our favorite scenes. Happy
but it's a great scene.
It's a good scene.
Of course
scene.
It is. No, of course it is. But... So we agree at the house.
Let's then ask who's everyone's favorite speech then. Like, let's do that.
It's got to be Carmella.
Oh, it's Carmella.
She didn't want a funeral. She didn't want a remembrance of any kind. Why? She didn't think anybody would come. She wouldn't write down her memories for her grandchildren because she figured nobody loved her enough to read them. She knew there was a problem.
My sister, as you know from listening to episodes, has a love of Christopher Moltisanti.
He's a close second with his, I wrote down like almost verbatim with his silly, high as balls, like he's anecdotal so shit.
High, and then A just sitting there on his arm, like listening to him, letting him go.
So she's high too.
Of
They're
course.
So the, high.
I just love them. They can do really no wrong.
They say there's no two people on Earth exactly the same. No two faces, no two sets of fingerprints. But do they know that for sure? Because they would have to get everybody together in one huge space. And obviously that's not possible, even with computers.
All of this to say, what does he say, Danny? He goes, what, all of this to say?
What's to say that there isn't another Mrs. Soprano out there? Or there ever will be. And maybe without the fears and the paranoia, but he's saying. So what I'm saying is,
and then he stops. So I think that was my favorite. Why is Carmella both of your favorites?
Oh. Because, I mean, I've been waiting two seasons for that to be said. I mean, she's a narcissist. She's awful, but she was aware of it. She finally says that what we all want to say is she knew there was a problem. That's the best part.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's
she
not
knew
just
there
Carmella.
Was a problem.
We have to give a shout out to Suzanne Shepherd as her mother and Tom Aldridge as her father.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Those two veteran actors are amazing in that scene.
Be quiet.
This is my house.
I'm leaving.
Let her talk, goddammit.
Get down!
No, I'll speak if I want. Goddammit, who are you? Minister of Propaganda? We suffered for years under the yoke of that woman. Years! She estranged us from our own daughter. Ruined, I don't know how many goddamn Christmases. I don't want to even begin to count.
You.
No, don't hand me that. Bullshit!
Sarah, we've never really talked about them.
Okay,
characters.
So over the weekend, I noticed for the first time that she is not only Carmella's mom, but she is Karen's mom in Goodfellas, so Melfi's mom.
Yes.
I never noticed that. And I went, oh, and I went, looked at the
screen. Sarah was pointing.
I was pointing
at the screen saying, my goodness.
Context clues.
I know this person.
And it Jewish awesome. In that movie. She's a Jewish mother in
thing.
That movie.
That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, Jewish and Italian, the line is so thin.
Line is
not
thin.
For her character in Goodfellas, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. No. And kind of probably not for Tony in this episode, actually.
And yes, that's true. A little tie in there. Tom Aldridge, who is a 5-time Tony nominee. Did you guys know that?
Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Never won.
Wow.
Not nominated, though, for what his most famous role is, which is the narrator and the mysterious man in the original production of Into the Woods, starring Bernadette Peters.
And it came to pass, all that seemed wrong was now right, and those who deserved to were certain to live a long and happy life. Ever after.
Ever after.
Into the Woods, a show that we all love. Jess, you've been in it.
4 times.
4 times. Once with me, right in high school. You were the witch to my baker, right?
Yes.
And I've done it a few times. Sarah, how many times have you done Into the Woods?
Zero.
Sarah has seen Into the Woods more times than she'd like ever.
Yeah, I've seen you all.
She'd like some of her time back.
So, Jess, you cursed him and his family.
I did.
It's fucked up.
You did. You shot a little lightning bolt at my crotch.
Yes, I had lightning hands, these like special weird hands that had like, I had to push my thumb and my index finger together.
And I had a light in my crotch that I had to push a button at this. Like we had to time it. Remember how hard that was to time your light to my crotch light? And not to digress, but if you look at all the old photographs, because this was back when you just had cameras, any picture of me in costume, My crotch is glowing because the flash of the camera was reflected on the light.
My hands look like they're like yellow. They're yellow hands.
Yes.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
2001.
In fact, I mean, literally, probably March of 2001.
Yeah.
Wow.
This could have been the day of the matinee. For all we know, this could have been the final performance because I'm sure it was around March.
That's awesome.
That's super fun. I love that.
Anything else about this scene before we move on?
What? Yes, there's a million things in the scene. Are you kidding me?
I'm in.
I mean, Janice calling out in front of everybody that she threw away all of her and Barbara's stuff is amazing.
Janice disobeying them by calling the meeting.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing, do you think they were right to do what they did to have anything?
No. I go off about that. My mother would haunt me from the grave if I disobeyed what she wanted for her funeral.
I'm torn.
I'm torn. And I am torn because, okay, no offense to people's wishes, but she's dead. So the funeral is not for her. The funeral is for people who mourn the person. So she doesn't know really, or hopefully is in a better place and doesn't really care what people do on Earth anymore. Like, I think it's for the people around you mourning you. So I think it's a Catholic thing. We like need a funeral. It's like a weird thing for us.
I don't need, like, I get it, but he also said, like, Tony even said, like, she didn't want anything, but I thought we could just, you know, all get together at the house. So at least, like, he thought of
a shindig. He thought
of that aspect.
A shindig.
A little shindig.
That would have been enough, but Janice then still would have been in that situation, though, to do that.
And then she, like, talks about her, the faith, and, like, then when they're leaving the funeral home, she like brings up Buddhist like stuff. So it's kind of really funny that she's just so intertwined with, she's crazy.
She's confused.
She said wildflowers blossom best among the rocks.
Well, most of you will probably remember that I have an extraordinary visual sense. When I was a child, my mother didn't let me rest on those laurels. She didn't flatter me. She believed that wildflowers blossom best among the rocks, with little water.
Is what she said her mother said to her.
With very little water.
With very little water.
What's your thing on an open versus closed casket?
It depends.
That doesn't bother me.
Like, it does do when whatever it's somebody, they gotta do. It does when it's somebody younger.
Yes, that
I
is
think
true.
When they're older and they've lived a beautifully long life, like, I can handle the open casket so much more. I'm like, oh my God, they look so beautiful. Look at this dress or look at this suit and look at how nice. When it's somebody younger, it's very hard. It's very hard to see a young person in there.
Yeah.
See, and I actually hate it when it's closed because my imagination is worse than what I see. I feel there's a closure when I see them at peace. And I'm in the minority, I know. A lot of people think I'm crazy. I do.
I think that's fair.
That's fair.
And I like kneeling next to you or mom or whoever and going, ooh, they did a really nice job.
Yeah.
Look how they did. I like that little moment where we pretend like we're praying, but we're really judging how the funeral home did.
It's so much easier though when they're older. The worst was like there's been some ringers where like I've been to the wakes where I'm like, these people need to all relax. This person lived a nice long life. Like, why are we so upset?
Like wailing. Yeah.
And then I've been to ones where like everyone's good and then all of a sudden, like this is terrible. My grandparents died within a month of each other. Knew it was gonna happen. It's fine. My poor grandfather was doing so well until, like, I guess they, like, brought her. They were bringing the casket back out during the ceremony, like, the Catholic ceremony. And he, like, put his arms around it and, like, just, like, leapt towards the casket. And I was like, oh, my God. He's, like, has emotion. This is crazy.
Oh.
But it's so sad. But it was, you know, there's just so many wild things happen at wakes and funerals that you're just, it brings out the craziest things in people.
Yeah, like Carmella.
Like Carmella. Well, she defended AJ, where she's like, enough, don't put my son on the spot and make him say something and make him uncomfortable. I love that.
Yes, that was.
I usually don't defend AJ, but I thought that was she was
totally
right.
Totally necessary.
All right, favorite quote. So I think it has to be, oh yeah, you, Woody fucking Guthrie. It's when Tony, when Janice says, you know us working class, or us working people. That's just a great line. And as always, I have runner-ups. So when Tony tells Melfi, when I heard she was dead, relief flooded through my veins. Flooded my veins. It's so bad. And you just go, you know what? I love the honesty. Like, he does. It really just demonstrates he's so comfortable with her at this point. He's really going to tell Melfi what he thinks. Like, that is. And he says, like, isn't this bad? I'm a bad son. Like, tell me I'm a bad son. And she sits there in silence and stares at him. It's good. It's just a good moment. And I just really like when Syl says,
we all know how much you loved her.
Like, kind of comforting in his eyes, where like, this ends here, like, in history, the history books will say that you loved your mom, you know, like that type of thing. It's so good.
But the funny, really funny thing about that line is, we all know not that you loved her, but how much you loved her, because it implies very little.
Very little. How much you loved her.
We all know she's only alive because you loved her, otherwise you would have had her killed because she tried to kill you.
Yeah, literally. Joseph, your favorite quote?
Mine is an amazing exchange between Tony and Junior.
It's all that truck called broiled meat you people ate.
Nobody told us till the 80s.
I'm kidding you, you old fuck.
Yes! I have that written down.
That was.
I have that written down as one of my runner-ups.
That was a great line.
It's so good. Jess, what's yours?
There's a couple, but for some reason, I really liked you're a captain when I say you're a captain. Yeah, I'll turn on my hearing aid so I don't miss it.
That's a good line.
I was like, oh, Ralphie, that's like the one line that you're actually a funny and you're not an asshole.
Yeah, that's a funny line. And just like, Ralphie.
When the FBI, is it the FBI? Yeah, I guess the FBI. His mother died last night. No shit.
Yeah. Shit. Wait, then they hear him whistling down the stairs with like a very happy
and he's eating like cereal.
Honeycombs.
Yes, yes.
Honeycombs.
What's his face when he said, my dad's old too, and he hugs him?
Bobby Bob. Yes.
Bobby.
Which is
my dad's sick too. My dad's sick too.
Oh, my dad's sick
too. That's a cannoli too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so Ralphie's here. Where was Ralphie during the repast at the house?
That's an outstanding question. I've never noticed that in 20 years. You're right.
Well, because, okay, so this is a huge character that has appeared this episode. He's about to just, I don't even really know. He's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, he's Richie's replacement in more ways than one. You know, I mean, he's now part of Richie's crew. He's trying to run Richie's crew.
Yeah.
And he's the Richie of season 3. I mean, right. let's put it like that.
Yeah.
He starts it off so good when they all go to, where do they all go? Is it the wake where he puts his arms around him and he goes, and he just starts, oh, his house. And he starts crying and he's like, oh, I know how you feel. He always makes it about him. And I was like,
well, no, that's literally the first thing we ever see Ralphie Cifarello do.
Oh, I mean, he's making it about him.
And he walks in like, this has been a character forever. And the show's brilliant at doing that. Like, we just accept it. Like, okay, he's here. You know, but he hasn't been here. His story has never been one to get involved. So we just don't know who he is.
And then he catches you up on like years and years of friendship where he's like, remember Ma from last year? And he just pretends to cry. And you're like, what a douchebag.
Right.
He is. He gives me the chills anytime I see him. Yeah, we're about to have some fun with him. Theme of the episode.
Human beings are self-divided into parts. This is kind of complicated, but first of all, let me point out, I think the theme was secondary when they wrote the episode. I don't think they wrote it necessarily with a theme in mind. I think this was a Jess disagrees, but we'll hear her thoughts. Human beings are self-divided into two parts. One part that wants nothing but to make our parents happy, and the inevitable side that's always going to go against our parents. A few examples. The funeral, like you said. Meadow and Noah. I mean, Meadow wants nothing but to make her father happy, but now she's inevitably going to not do it. Harpo and Janice. There's this mention of, you know, even though he's literally homeless,
he's a street person.
He's still not going to be with Janice. By the way, I had to look up what on the pavers meant, and that literally means he's homeless. It's just slang for being homeless. I didn't know. James Cagney as Tommy, as his mother. You know, we have that ongoing movie going on. You know, Janice not pleasing her mother in enough that she saves any of her things, and then even Rosalie makes a comment. My son is disrespectful. Another character that we're going to see throughout the season.
Can I ask, is it because of what he's wearing? Why is he disrespectful?
I agree. I think it's more of he kind of says it so nonchalantly, like, I'm here because I have to be.
He doesn't mean how he says it.
But I do agree with you. I don't think he's being disrespectful at all. I think they were trying desperately to set this character up as a disrespectful character, but I don't think they did a very good job.
The only thing I could think of is that he had like a sweater on. Like he didn't have a suit and tie on like everybody else. That's the only thing I was like.
Remember those sweaters?
Yeah.
Do you remember those sweaters?
Yeah, everybody had them.
Everyone had them, and we all either really looked good in them or we all thought we really looked good in them.
Yep. He looks really good in it.
You like him, right? You think, right? Jackie's good.
He's a good looking kid. Yeah.
Jess. What is your, because you were shaking your head. What's your thought on the theme?
I think the whole theme is about motherly love, not having it, having it, having a little, having a lot. They, even when they talk about, and it does cross over with the theme, they made it a point to show Tom Powers and Public Enemy and Rico and Little Caesar are not two men, nor are they merely characters. They are a problem that sooner or later we, the public, must solve. Which goes into the symbolism of like, are we solving the Livia problem? Are we solving the sanitation wars? Are we solving the absence of love from our parents? And the movie like that he's watching with James Cagney, like the body coming home dead instead of rejoicing with the family, is this Tony's fear? Is he cries because she loves her boys so much, both of her boys in that movie.
Yeah.
And he's never felt that love from his mother. And that's all he wants. Meanwhile, Carmela loves her children and is a beautiful mother. And then you have like the halfway moms like Janice, who doesn't even, you know, talk to her kid, who's a, you know, so I think it's just surrounded by all types of mothers and how we feel about our mothers and our caregivers.
Really, really interesting. Also, question about the movie Public Enemy. Why did it take Tony 4 nights to watch that movie? Or did he watch it 4 times in a row?
No, I think that's it was on, like, it's a video in the video. I'm going to watch a little bit of it. I don't think Tony.
The movie runs for 1 hour and 24 minutes. There's no way. I thought that was a flaw in the storyline.
Yeah, but it works so well.
Of course it did.
Especially in, and maybe this is more of a symbolism discussion, but the fact that they meditize this episode so much, which was so beautifully leaning into the ridiculous CGI of Nancy Marchand, who, may she rest in peace, they wanted to have a scene that kind of closed her character.
It's so bad.
It's very bad. But I will say it was not bad in 2001.
No.
It's bad now. It wasn't that bad. I remember watching this. I remember not knowing she was dead. I didn't know that.
She was dead.
And I don't think I learned till years later that this was a CGI thing. I think it worked. I think it was done respectfully. It cost $250,000. So it kind of tells you what's, you know, how hard CGI is.
I have a weird thing with like using my image after I die. Like that whole concept of, which is happening more and more now, is just
why the strike is, you know, creepy. That's one of the main reasons of the strike.
Yeah, it's
but
just
there's
creepy.
A difference though, but and maybe this is a legality, but they own the rights to everything she said. It wasn't like they used scenes from The Naked Gun and said, let's put it in to The Sopranos.
It's just kind of strange.
I do like the bow that they tried to put on with Svetlana saying like, I'll get her to do these books for you. Don't you worry. It's a I promise. And yes. and you can tell like even the little CGI, like it didn't bring me out of it. Even when I was rewatching it a couple times.
Yeah.
Because you kind of see that she kind, even in the weird CGI thing, like she has a relationship with Svetlana. She's the only one she really listens to.
Mm-hmm. I agree. My point is, so they had this moment and they were like, well, now we have to kind of acknowledge the fact that we know this is ridiculous. And but they start with the rewinding of that scene, mm-hmm. which is the only episode to ever do that. And I thought it was this brilliant thing of like, we again, you're watching a TV show and we know you're going to rewind, similar to how Tony is going to constantly fast forward and rewind through Public Enemy throughout the episode. And I just thought that really worked well. And there's a couple other examples too that I can get to later, but that's, I just thought this was a brilliant way to execute this episode.
Yeah. And it draws the direct parallel between Public Enemy and him and his mom. Like, yeah. Really, really directly, obviously.
Yeah. She says, I knew my baby would come home. I knew my baby would come home. Yeah. He's like, oh, no one will ever say that about me.
But not that now that she's dead, just in general.
Never. Yeah. Like she's never said it about him. No one will ever say that about me. And like, and then to think of the adverse of like, is he also upset because he knows that that's how he's coming home as a dead guy. Like that's the only way he's really coming home to everybody loving him at one time, because Meadow does, you know, there's never all three moments where all his two of his children and his wife and his sisters, like they don't all love him at the same time ever.
Yeah. There's always conflict going on. So my theme ties into both of yours, and I totally agree with the motherly love, the parents, etc. But I also, it has, maybe it's a motif of us dealing with our parents' death and coming to terms that they were not perfect. And now that they've passed, like you're kind of dealing with saying goodbye and, you know, this fakeness of acting like they were perfect and the memories of them, of anyone really, not just our parents, that haunts us. And they leaned into this haunting. So this AJ thinks he hears his grandma, we see pussy in the mirror, which is a huge moment that's just stuck in this episode, right? Okay, Joseph, you told me that the dude on the stairs was just an extra and it was an issue, but I thought it was a ghost.
I mean, listen, I think in narrative, it is. To me, I always think it's a ghost, but it was a happy accident. It was. Now, there's a lot of speculation. Some people say it was the owner of the house.
Okay, hold on a second, really quick. So if everyone doesn't know what we're talking about, just one second. They're at the thing. Tony's wiping sweat off his face. And in the background, you see a guy, clear as day, walk down the stairs, look at the people in the room and go back up the stairs. Okay, go ahead, Joseph. That's what
almost awkwardly, like, I don't want to be part of
like,
this.
Sorry.
And it's actually during If I Loved You, which we'll talk about later. So there's a lot of speculation that maybe it's the owner of the house who, you know, was upstairs and made a dipshit move. Some say it was a tech guy. I think overall that
he was in a suit. He was in a black suit.
Well, that's the thing. So David Chase, I think, eventually said that it was an extra who just wasn't there and was peeing and came down and screwed up the scene. But you don't keep that unless you know it works as a narrative.
Right.
And it works really well. Then there was speculation. I remember a lot of times reading on the forums, as I like to say, that it's Johnny. It's Johnny Soprano coming to watch his wife's wake. Now, Johnny Soprano looks nothing like that, nor did Johnny Soprano ever wear glasses. So I don't buy that. I think if anything, it looks like Young Junior, but clearly it's not. But
I thought it was Spoons.
Oh, okay.
That's who I thought of, because it's another person that they got rid of, right? Pussy is made an appearance.
So does Tony see Pussy? Let's ask that question now.
I watched it twice. I had to rewind it because I'm like, does he see him? I don't think he sees him, and I don't think he's meant to see him. It's not meant to be Tony's ghosts. They're meant to be people looking in for Livia, and that's it.
You think? Why would Pussy care about Livia?
Well, I think Pussy doesn't care about Livia. I think he's haunting Tony. He'll always watch what Tony does. That's what I get out of it.
Also, I don't think he saw him either, to be fair. But it's just, I don't know why.
There was no reaction.
There's zero reaction.
And every time he's ever saw him, he always like either blinks or like does a shake or a head movement. And he didn't do anything.
See, I disagree with you. I think he stops and has a major reaction.
What? No, he doesn't.
It's not a shocked, big-eyed. It's a moment of wait a minute, what was that? Like, because Furio's having this really comical conversation about Survivor.
Yeah.
And Tony is very thrown off. Like, he changes his disposition quite a bit. I disagree with you. I think he absolutely sees him.
Okay.
Also, I really enjoy the secret weird liquor cabinet that we've never accessed before. That's just in a hallway in this like weird like closet.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that hallway, nor do I think we ever see it again.
I don't think we ever see it again. And it's not even like a full length one. It's like in the middle of the wall and it looks like a mirror, and he opens it and pulls out like this, the good liquor. I'm like, I want a secret like dumbwaiter liquor portal.
Portal.
Furio looks fantastic in that suit.
He is fantastic.
Oh, he just looks so good there. And normally I'm not like, I'm never attracted to Furio like physically. I just love his like ambiance and his spirit. But this was the first time where I said, damn, I get it. I get why the women like him.
I love him.
All right, so let's move on to our symbolism. I had an idea. I thought since there are three of us, let's play symbolism categories.
Okay.
Because I'm sure that we overlapped a lot. So instead of, you know, keeping this going on for 7 hours, which we probably could, let's place categories. So I'll go first.
Okay.
All right. And if I have something, if I say something and you guys have it, you say, no, we got it. Okay. I want to talk specifically about the rewinding. That beginning moment, I think it represents two things. Number one, it's the fact that Sopranos is a modern day public enemy. Okay, it reminds us that we're watching the public enemy. And also, Tony wants to rewind back time to when Noah would never dare step into that house. Because back when Public Enemy was a movie, Meadow would never even think to look at someone like Noah. So I just think that's what rewinding is symbolism of. Anybody want
to? I have the rewind. Yeah, I have the parallel to the mob.
I put rewind and then I put Uncle Ben slash Noah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is so horribly racist.
Well, yeah.
So is Tony.
Yeah. So is Tony.
Horribly racist. Like, and it never clicked with me before until they did the rewind and it like focused and then he said Uncle Ben and I'm like, oh, you're horrible.
Yeah.
Like, that's bad.
The whole thing is so bad that he doesn't even try to hide it. He just goes. I didn't have the memory of it being so like, I'm just going to tell you to get out of my house.
And like, I thought he was him.
Oh, horrible. It's just truly horrible.
And truly expects, I believe, he truly expects Noah to be like, well, yeah, that's what I am. And I get it, sir. He truly doesn't think Noah's going to be upset about this.
You think?
I do. And I think that is sort of how the show got away with it. Because it needs to be so natural that he was born in a different time and it's just his mindset. And he almost doesn't mean it maliciously.
He doesn't. He's saying, you see what I'm saying, right? Like, you see what I'm saying.
Right.
Oh, it's hard to watch. But yeah, I agree with you.
And I'm not excusing it, but I think that's how the show excuses it by saying he's not being bad at this moment. He's just truly trying to protect his daughter from what he doesn't understand.
Yeah, that's fair.
But
okay, we had the rewind. Go ahead.
It's your turn.
So right before Tony hears that his mother has passed, he is in the sprinkler. So he's having a moment of cleansing.
Oh, I didn't have that.
I'm pissed that I didn't. He even comes in wet.
Yeah, soaked.
Oh, bravo. Jess.
Damn, that's so good. Oh, so upset. All right, so in the movie, in Public Enemy, the brother says, you got no heart and no brains. Money's all you got, so you'll need it because Cagney says, oh, I got all the money I need. You know, you can have whatever you need. And then he says, the brother's like, no heart, no brains, money's all you got, so you'll need it. And he like literally is talking about all of the money with the sanitation wars and how much this is going to cost and how much the flight's going to cost. And, oh, you calculated the flight. Like, he's always about all, every single cent of money he's, like, always about.
Okay.
And he has no problem giving it to people who need it when they need it. So he's kind of like both brothers. And I think he's conflicted of who he really is. Like, do I love people? Do people need to love me because I have money? Do people not need to love me? So I like that.
We'll give it to her.
I'll give it to her. I didn't have that.
I didn't have that.
Give
either,
it to her. Probably. You're keeping score?
Because it's, I am.
Wow.
I am. It's 0-1-1. The Godfather, the beautiful Godfather reference of them coming down the elevator to see Cusarelli exactly the way that they see Bonacera mm-hmm. when James Caan dies. Even the line they throw in that line of dialogue, Marlon Brando says, "I want you to do everything in your power." And that's exactly what Cusarelli says. "I'll do everything." I don't know the exact quote.
"I'll use all my powers, all my skills.
Don't go crazy. I mean, you know."
That was just a great moment.
I did not have that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's direct. That's not, I mean, I honestly, I'm reaching to say that symbolism.
I don't watch The Godfather enough to know that.
That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. All right. We got a tie game. 1-1-1.
I'm going to go with Junior throwing his hands up at the wake and saying, "Go ahead. I'm fed up," is very Livia. And I felt like that was a memorial nod to Nancy Mar. It's very, like, if you watch it, it is very parallel to how she acts.
It's a 1 for Sarah. Well
yeah,
done.
Wow, I love this
All
game.
Right. Sarah is in the lead. Jess.
I fold. I got better quotes than I got symbolism.
That's fine.
All right. So that's my turn.
Yeah.
Food and the panic attack.
Oh, I had that, though. I thought we talked about that.
No, food in the panic attack. Not only is it food connected with violence and that incredible blood-soaked Tony laying there that we eventually find out is just tomato juice. No, food and violence. And it also is a cannoli because we're going to deal with panic attacks and food later.
Yeah.
So, I had, point? You didn't have
I
that?
Had the blood looks like he shot on the floor. So I got like half of it. I'll give it to you.
I'll give myself a point.
About the food earlier. Maybe I'm just remembering other episodes I listened to that you guys talk about.
We do like mention food and violence quite often on this show.
They're interlaced. But
two,
also the old movies and Tony's feelings, like, you know, that's always a motif. That's more of a motif. That's
it is. That it happens often. Yes. Whatever he's watching is definitely comfort. What's going on. Yeah. Okay. So we love my turn. My turn.
Your turn.
We love our existential questions from AJ, right? So he says, "What does it mean?" And AJ asks it twice right before Meadow helps AJ figure out the Robert Frost poem about death, which is like they're literally talking about symbolism. So felt like we needed a shout out there.
I like that he goes like over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. Like yeah. Thanksgiving poem?
Grandma's on his mind, you know?
Yeah.
I
had not that part of that scene, but I had about black and white both meaning death. And I thought that was very meta because they're basically saying symbolism's bullshit. And you're sitting there trying to find the symbolism.
Yeah. Yep.
Is that the same?
No, I think that's a different. I think that's a point for you.
So we each get a point. We're tied 3-3.
Okay. Tony goes out to the pool alone for alone time when they're at the repass, and that's where he goes to protect and love his family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck. Well done.
And 4-3. That's where he started with his little duck family.
Yeah, the little duck family. I have more, so keep going. Are you out?
Tony wearing the bandage on his arm was like the reverse of an armband. Instead of being black that you traditionally wear, white, which I'm going to, maybe this is reaching, but if black means mourning, then I'm going to say the white
is happy.
Represents happy. And he's constantly wearing a white armband throughout the episode that his mother dies. So.
You got it. Tony smoking a cigar at the wake, and we know in Tony's has power. Or he's feeling powerful, and it is very much placed well because he feels powerful that his mother is now out of his way.
Yeah, I'm a little pissed that I didn't get that.
Yeah, well.
All right, 5-4. My last one is actually more of a commentary on how heavy-handed this ridiculous symbolism is, but I thought it was a little much when Meadow watches Tony talk to a Jewish politician and a black reverend as like, oh, you hate Noah because he's black and Jewish, but now a black guy and a Jewish guy. It almost felt like
your good friend.
Right. It almost felt like an old joke, like a Jew walks into a bar. Like, I was like, this is ridiculous. I thought that was heavy-handed symbolism, but it was symbolism nonetheless.
I did not have it. Okay. And my last one.
Oh, shit. Oh, you're about to win.
I know, not unless you have it.
I'm done.
Oh, so the song in the beginning, I'm Your Captain, the song.
Yes.
It's totally talking about Ralphie.
Yes.
I'm your captain. I'm your captain. Though I'm feeling mighty sick.
I had that in anything else. Shit.
I did too.
It's a symbol, so I win categories.
It's you guys put it on the wrong part.
Yeah, whatever.
Six to five. Sarah wins.
Wow.
Let's save that every now and then.
Can you tell them that when you get back to school?
First day of school.
I beat you in symbolism?
Yes, I'm your English teacher. I know all except my sister who beat me in category.
Perfect. All right, what does the title mean?
I mean, it literally translates to farewell, my Livia. I don't think there's any other. Little Livia. Sorry, farewell, little Livia. I think it's just a beautiful little nod to, I don't think there's much in it.
Yeah, I just love that they named the episode for her and it's us saying goodbye. Yeah, it's beautiful. And I love Svetlana.
That character can do no wrong for me, even in future episodes. My God, I love her.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I agree.
I love that she's a musical fan. And that, like, I liked her before that. And then when she says, she knew I liked the musicals.
The show tunes.
The show tunes. And I'm like, oh, you just hopped up, like, even more notches than you were before.
And very quickly about that scene, Janice's pronunciation of the word discography was perfect.
I want the entire discography back at the house by this weekend.
Not many people can say that word, like roll that off their tongue. I want the entire discography. I can't even say it. But the way she said it was like she practiced that. She knew Svetlana was going to bullshit her and she was ready with that command. And bravo, Janice.
Do you think Janice is right?
No.
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 It sucks, but Janice is wrong.
Absolutely. She's she's wrong with the records and she's wrong by kicking her out of the house when Tony told her she could stay there.
Oh, yeah.
You're correct on both accounts, but here's what I would say. If I was Svetlana in that situation, I would give them back.
Nope.
I would.
If I had a better relationship with the woman than the woman did with her daughter, which I had before in not that aspect, but different capacities, I'm not giving that shit back. That didn't mean anything to them. They just want to sell it. Not doing it.
She's right. Like Janice says, like it's worth a lot of money. Like she's not even going to keep them for her memory.
Okay. I was just asking. I think my most valuable. I want to know what's in her collection though. Cause I have a lot of I have a huge Broadway record collection and I really want to know what's in her collection.
Well, I can tell you Carousel. Is definitely in there.
The woman obviously has some sort of soul. She loved Carousel and think about the symbolism there with the two in Carousel versus her and her husband in their life.
Yeah.
And like, If I Loved You was her favorite song.
So for the listeners that need clarification, Livia's favorite song is If I Loved You from the masterpiece by Rodgers and Hammerstein, Carousel, which is a story of redemption, a story of someone who dies feeling like they were hated, but tried their best to be a good person, but they get a chance to come back. I will brag for a moment. I've had the honor of playing the role, the main role of Carousel. It was a dream role of mine, and I just love doing it. And both of these beautiful women were there to cheer me on. It was a very proud moment of mine.
I love you. Time and again, I will try to say how I want you.
So I love that that's the song that they play. But I think it's worth noting, Jess, is that, yes, you're right. But if you just take the song and not Carousel, it's If I Loved You. Like, the song is basically, the song is coy. We know that in the right. in the world of the show, that it's
a flirtatious moment of, well, this would happen if I did love you, what would happen?
Right. But we know as an audience that she does love him at that moment. In the, for an audience that doesn't know that song, what they're hearing is, I don't love you.
Right.
If yeah. I loved you. And I think that's why it's a brilliant choice. I think it works both ways, but I think Chase and the writers did it as the song, not the piece.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's my thought.
Interesting. But. Most Valuable Goomba?
On three. Jess, are you ready with your Most Valuable Goomba?
Yeah.
One, two, three. Janice. You went with Carmella.
Yeah. It's a good choice.
I want to hit Janice with a bat across her face almost this entire episode.
Okay, but we say that the Most Valuable Goomba is the person who pushes the plot line forward the most, and we would not have our favorite scene without Janice and her gumption.
Defiant ways.
So, can we talk about the really creepy scene with Janice where we all thought that was like her boyfriend's son, and then it's her boyfriend?
So,
Beyonce.
Okay, is it though? Because yes. I was watching it and I thought, is this just like a coworker?
So the first and second time I ever watched this episode, it never clicked. I always thought it was her fiance's son, and that's what she was feeding him.
He
his
looks
eggs.
Like he's 19 he's years 12? Old.
Is he?
He's 19.
Is he eating eggs?
Yes, she eats your eggs, baby.
He eats them.
He does.
Uh oh.
He is 19.
That's wild.
He can go all night.
What?
And it's her, like, it's her need for every single man that she dates has to become her fiance. Like,
yes. Yes, he can go all night. That's what she's going to tell Tony in the next episode.
Why is she telling her brother that?
I don't know, because they have a weird relationship.
That is crazy.
And on behalf of all the men that were ever 19, no, he can't. Yeah. Nope, you're wrong. If we pulled this shit or something that made me go, oh my God, that's us. Bare Naked Lady CD.
I laughed at that.
Why, Sarah, what about it? I think I'm a little too young. I know what CD is.
I love CD.
I've seen the Bare Naked Ladies live and they put on one hell of a damn show.
Oh, they're great. But why is that particular CD funny?
No, just in general. Do you know 90s, 2000s?
Oh, that's it. It's just the time. It's just the time capsule. Okay. Understood.
Oh, absolutely.
So, talking about who to call when someone dies, it's like the first thing our family says. I have the whole theory that my family, like, we do not mourn until we walk in that church. We are in execution mode immediately. Yes. It's just how we handle a catastrophe, a tragedy. Like, it is the first thing. So, like, it'll be like, Joseph, who do I call in the family? Who do you want me to call to tell them that someone died? And it's just like, how do we get the phone
you have like
going?
A second alley phone tree of deaths.
Yes.
Yeah. And I just really, really related to that with him saying, I'll call this person. You call this person.
It was a sign for me that I was an adult or they yeah. saw me as an adult.
Yeah, when
Joseph,
you,
we need
when
you to call
you
these people.
People. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
The something that made you go, oh my God, that's us. Where like, you have that one person in your family where they're not at all upset. And then they open the door and all of a sudden they just burst into tears and oh, they're gone. And you're like, what the F? You didn't even like this person.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. There's always that person.
I was like, oh, this is the eye rolling moment of the century where you're like, yes, you're hugging them. Like, so like patting them on the back. Like,
well,
it's okay.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And I have that on my list because I think I've heard our dad say that.
Yeah.
When someone dies,
all the cliches.
Yeah, what are you gonna do?
What's your favorite one? What's your favorite of the cliches you heard in this episode? Because I know mine.
Go ahead, list them though.
Well, you got what are you gonna do?
Yeah,
we all knew you loved her. At least she didn't suffer.
At least she didn't suffer. Yeah.
But my favorite one is when Carmella's mother walks in and goes, what next, huh? That is such a cliche of what people say when someone dies.
Yes. I think I have to go with, what are you going to do? But that's also a really good one when she walks in and says, what next, eh?
My next one is my laundry done? Not so much that I would have ever said that, but I could hear our mother going after us if we... Could you imagine?
I would have been slapped across my damn face if I ever spoke that way. Can you imagine saying that?
And by the way, and I think just the same thing for your mother. Of course, they did our laundry. I'm not going to sit there and go, they didn't, and we're very grateful. But could you imagine walking in the house, especially from college, going, is my laundry done? My God.
The balls on her
are big.
Big, hairy balls.
Did we ever tell the story, Joseph, of when you went to college and learned how to do laundry?
Why do you have to tell this story?
Can I tell the story?
Go ahead.
Do it.
You're going to fuck it up, though.
Joseph came home. I was little, and I just remember my mommy screaming because she was appalled. Joseph came home, and my mom
was our father was appalled. No, my mother defended me.
Oh, whatever.
I could have walked in with a Joseph smoking gun and blood.
Joseph came home with, like, all of his whites were gray. And they were like, are you not separating your wash? Like, and they could not figure it out. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. And our dad was like, tell me exactly what you're doing. And he's like, I put the whites in, and I put the bleach in, and I put the machine on. And my dad's like, you're not putting detergent in? And my brother thought you just bleached your whites and didn't actually wash them. So gross. Gross.
And this was in June of my freshman year.
This was gross. So that's amazing.
Let me just point out, though, but I was also the only man or woman in college that was separating their whites and darks. So quite frankly, kudos to me that I even knew to do that.
I
don't do that anymore.
Oh, stop. Oh, I do.
You don't separate your whites and your darks?
The certain things that are, there's very little that are just white that we own.
I've like avoided, but like, yeah, I agree.
If we have things that are just
white, then that's different. But like, of course, towels are separated and like sheets and stuff. But like, no, clothes-wise, there's hardly anything.
Yeah, I'm with you. We don't do whites too often. Anyway, what else?
For this shit, I gotta miss the first Jets home game.
Okay, so
this has happened in my family. I think I've said it a million times, not about the Jets because I'm not a Jets fan, but about the Mets or the Dolphins, where I'm like, I'm not missing this. Like, you're not seeing me. Sorry. Or we bring like the headphones, or we're listening with our like little radios. I remember doing that.
Wait, so I didn't know that Syl was such a big football fan.
He's a gambler, and he probably takes.
There you go. Thank you. Because I'm like, is he? That whole little scene's funny.
It's so funny. Her. She's like trying to calm him down. He's so upset. He puts on his cute little boy.
The dog is so cute. Yeah.
Well, my father always says people die at the most inconvenient times. He always says that. <We're> like, yeah. Sarah, did it pain you a little bit when they saved all of Tony's stuff? Because if you go to our attic in our parents' house, there are about 75 albums of me as a child and about one of you.
It's
my entire childhood is 75 albums. You're one, maybe two.
It's true.
I think we're pretty even, my brother and
you and your brother.
That must be nice.
There's more of my stuff to be saved because he didn't do like plays and stuff. He did sports. So there was more memorabilia for me, but
oh, there you go. Maybe that's why, Joseph, that you have more stuff.
you just acquire more crap because you did
more. I think it's just the second child thing. They're just like over taking pictures by then. I don't know.
No, you're their baby, and they're their only girl.
A lot of pictures of me. I'm telling
you, there's really not.
Yeah, it's just.
Wait, what did your mother say to me when I was like, "Oh, let's look at baby pictures of Joe"? And she's like, "We didn't take." What did she say?
Oh, Joseph was a really ugly baby.
Yeah,
I was a really ugly.
But she had the best one-liner, like where she wasn't. It wasn't too heavy-handed, but it was still like,
no,
like, like you're not. Like, oh well, what did she say?
Some probably like that I looked like E.T.
Yeah, it was something
quirky. She always used to say I looked
like Joseph, E.T. And Joseph, by the time you turned one, you were gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, still am, but yeah.
It was like, right. But as an infant, you tough.
He was like a little alien.
Yeah, it's tough. Our aunt put the E.T. doll next to you and said, look, they're the same.
Yeah. It's like the one picture of me that's available.
Right. It's like the only picture I've ever seen of you as an infant. But then you got really, really, really cute. But you had the white hair. Really cute. I have to do a shout out to just Tony crying at movies.
Yeah.
Because our father just doesn't care who sees him cry at a movie.
Oh, and me.
Oh, I
get that from Dad too.
I cry at a commercial. I cry over anything happy. Yeah. It just comes.
I'm a big
crier. It just happens. Yep.
Cannolis.
So let's want a rapid fire cannolis.
Let's do it.
Okay. Livia saying in the episode that she wishes the Lord would take her. That's kind of an obvious one.
It looks like Tony has been shot in the kitchen.
The opening song of You're a Captain Now with our good friend introduction of Ralphie.
Tony says there are a lot of things I could say right now that I'm not going to say. He says this to Janice already. Do we remember when, Joseph?
It's been said many times. It's a motif within the show, but I am 99% sure that Janice has always said it. This is the first time we've heard Tony say it.
Okay, so their cannoli kind of closed or is continuing there.
Well, and it's going to continue. A closed cannoli, bit of irony, Livia's alleged stroke in season one.
I love that the Reverend recognizes that Tony and him talked about how they would soon be the elders in their families in the episode where the Reverend's own father passed away. I like that touch.
Bobby, my dad's very ill too.
Yeah.
Tony saying that all of Meadow's innocence is gone, that she's becoming a robot. It just kind of foreshadows the whole season for Meadow.
Mm.
The toast between Carm, Tony, and Svetlana will be majorly referenced later. And Chris's drug-induced rant is also referenced later.
Nice. Oh, it is. You're right.
I can only. All right, we got to wrap this up. So anything else we want to throw out there?
Yeah, I got some stuff.
All right, round robin this shit?
Yeah, let's round robin this shit.
All right, I'm starting. Let's off by just a mention, a welcome to some great characters that we met in this episode. We've already talked about Ralphie. We've got Eugene, Noah, and Zelman.
Who's the politician.
Eugene Pontecorvo will become a maid guy soon, but he is one of Ralphie's crew. He's one of the guys that gets out of the car to beat the shit out of the guy.
Got it.
He becomes a very interesting character later in the show.
Got it.
Love his character. Minor, but good.
Cool. What's with the two kids and the dog in the shadow as they watch Livia being driven away in the ambulance?
I thought the exact same thing. That was very awkward.
Because you'd think maybe it was a boy and a girl and you're like, oh, that's Tony and Janice as little kids. Nothing. Like, I'm like, who were these two little boys?
I think it was just a creative, like an atmosphere that other people were there.
Yeah.
Them putting to bed the Vesuvio's fire and him not really having the balls to say anything and then having the awkward desserts in the dining room.
By the pastry chef, and she like says the guy's name.
Cuzzarelli's is a real funeral home.
Yes.
And I did not know that. I read, though, that it was demolished or possibly going to be demolished in 2019. Can't find whether or not it was, but I will say the website's gone. It no longer exists, but it did exist at the time.
That's a pretty funeral home.
Yeah.
So when Tony, the crew comes in, when they first all find out and they're all, you know, when Ralphie's crying, Syl says the funny line, we know we loved how much you loved her. He assigns, like, to get out of the situation, he kind of assigns something to all the guys. And he looks at Vito, the fat guy, and goes, go eat some schmoodadel. Like,
the great room. Let's all go to the great room. Like, let's call back to the great room. I don't know of any other culture but New Jersey Italian people that call it the great room.
It's funny you say that because in a future episode, Johnny Sack is going to say the exact same thing.
Let's all go. Great. And it's not your living room. It's not your TV room or your family room. It's the great room. It's the room that holds everybody that you only go to on occasion.
Where's Johnny Sack?
Johnny Sack's wife is.
Ginny's there.
Because she Ginny's says,
yes, she is.
Didn't mince words.
That is not her.
Who is that then? That is totally her.
Jess, I'm with you. I totally thought it was Ginny Sack.
Big woman with the Bob Black hair.
Yeah.
Ginny Sack, I don't believe even becomes a character or is cast until season 4.
No. Oh, Jess, I was totally with you.
It was not her.
Then who?
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Where was Johnny Sack, though?
Where's Johnny Sack? Yeah. Wow. Or even Carmine, quite frankly. Carmine would be there.
Yeah.
We see the famous scene that when Cagney hits May Clark with the lemon, which was referenced in Boca when Junior hit Bobby with the lemon meringue pie.
Yes. Is that an actual wedding photo of Nancy Marchand?
Probably.
It's pretty.
Hmm. She's a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty. Very stoic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He's not sitting down when he feels the anxiety. Come on.
Sit down.
Here's one I thought was really interesting. So Tony brings Livia a copy of the audiobook Omerta, which was written by the great Mario Puzo, who of course wrote The Godfather. And the reader on that audiobook is Michael Imperioli.
Is it really?
Aww.
Little meta. We leaned into the meta again.
Aww, I love that.
That's a nice bow.
I love that. Those bongs that Furio and Christopher and Aid are ripping to get ready for the wake, I guess. They go to the wake first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were the boardwalk bongs. It was like plastic, lime green,
so
see-through
called
plastic.
Yeah.
What are they called?
They're like the first. They first used the they're nice glass ones, but yeah, they were the ones you would win on the boardwalk or like go buy.
They didn't even have the glass ones. They only used the plastic ones that were on the, like, I'm like, that is the Seaside Boardwalk. They got those at the Seaside Boardwalk.
Quite possibly.
Oh, so good.
Svetlana's limp inexplicably changes.
Does it really?
And I noticed it and I had to rewind it because I'm like, is she? When she's walking to him when he comes in the door with the bag, and then when she walks to them with the glasses and gives him like she has the cigarette in her mouth and she has two glasses in one, or three shot glasses in one hand and then the vodka in the other, and she hands it to him, she's limping in a different, like she's leaning into her hip a different way. That was interesting.
All right.
It's like, okay, that's funny. Nobody caught that.
Yeah, that's, someone should have caught it.
And also, does she not have a real leg in real life?
No, she does. She has two legs,
right? Didn't you guys talk about that?
Yep.
Yeah.
I had to look back because this is one of those plot points that I wasn't sure when it first started to happen. But this is, in fact, the episode where we learned that Ray Curto is a rat.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't sure when it happened. I went, wait a minute, is this supposed to be a big revelation? I've just known it so many years, but yeah.
Yeah.
So we have another one.
And that's just slipped in there to this episode.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, let me go to office. And then the Office Depot, like, plug, were they sponsoring at the time? He's like,
yeah, they had to.
Yeah, the rare product placement. Yeah.
Had to. Just a call. It's very hard to see Junior walk into that wake. I think he is really sad, and that's a sad one because no one else is sad. Junior is sad.
And I think that starts his whole journey of descent, both in his mind and in his soul, like of everybody is dying around me, mm-hmm. and I am the only one left, and then his brain just goes. I think it's like that's the start of it. I think when he's at the casket that you start to see a little bit of him fading out of when Tony goes, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he says Uncle June, he's like startled by it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you see Tony like give a little like, what the hell's going on in his brain?
I assume he wasn't welcome to the repast because him and Carmela, or he's on house arrest.
He only got the furlough for just the wake, I believe, right? Didn't he say that or something like that?
Right. And I don't
Bobby's think not I, there either.
Bobby's not there. I don't think Carmela.
Yeah, wants him there. Okay.
Yeah, I think that was a little too far. Yeah. Can we talk about Emmys for a minute?
Sure.
You know, yeah. I love talking about the Emmys. Ada Turturro was nominated for an Emmy Award for this episode. I know you're going to be shocked, but she lost to Allison Janney in The West Wing, who had to win an Emmy every friggin' year for the first 4 years. So, but I will say I'm fine with that win. Allison Janney's amazing in the West Wing. But I was so happy Ada Turturro got a nomination for this episode. I think she really deserves it. And it's, let's bring up the fact also, she was not supposed to come back, or at least not that soon.
Right.
Nancy Marchand dies and they were like, we need a villain. We need a woman that's going to bust his balls. And she did so well in season two, but it is worth noting when she leaves after shooting Richie, that might've been it. That was kind of the plan. So
look, and then she was in, you know, the thorn and that everyone loved forever.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Piggybacking on my own comment, David Chase was also nominated by the Writers Guild for this episode.
Interesting. Which I
thought was interesting for an episode that is considered by many not to be a great one.
But he was nominated. It tests too how good it is because they're all listening and talking in one big, beautiful scene and so much is going on.
Yeah.
He lost to, by the way, Terry Winters and Tim Van Patten, who wrote Pine Barrens, which is a later episode
which
this season.
Is fine with me. Because Pine Barrens is my favorite episode.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
It's nothing beats it. So I have a little bit of a nitpick. So we learned that Livia died because Svetlana says she thought Livia went to sleep. Why are they there that night? What is she, poker to make sure that she was alive? I do not understand that. Like Livia should have slept through the night dead. And then in the morning, Svetlana goes, oh my God, she's not waking up.
The only thing that I can think of is that she is a nurse and maybe she has to wake up for medicine halfway through the night in order to maintain her pain and keep sleeping or something. And maybe she went to go like wake her like, hey, it's time for your meds and
dead. Okay. Okay.
No.
I think it's still weird.
I think Sarah's 100% right.
It's weird.
They needed it to happen with Meadow in the room. She's on her way home. And it's true. It's sloppy.
Sloppy. That lost him mad at me.
I have just one more quick one. Carmela's costume at the wake is fantastic.
It's a good one.
That jacket with its black, with the white underneath with black hair, just brilliant.
Yeah, I want to do my hair like that. How does she do that?
Oh,
the French
professional
twist.
Makeup people.
I always wanted a French twist, and always. I never ever understand how to do it.
Me too. Anyway, thank you, Jess. Really excited you came. Thank you for spending time with us. I had a blast.
Thank you for having me.
Jess, did you have fun?
I had a blast. I had so much fun. This was amazing.
Very quickly, let me do a plug. So you can also, if you liked hearing Jess, you can also hear her and two of my other friends talk about Seinfeld on my newest podcast, First, Last, Best, where we take one show and we talk about the pilot episode, the series finale, and the best episode. And she was on the Seinfeld episode. She did a great job. Please go and if you like Sibling Sit Down, go ahead and listen to First, Last, Best.
Sweet. That's all from us for now. Talk to you soon when we discuss season 3, episode 3, Fortunate Son. This has been The Sibling Sit Down. Thanks for listening to The Sibling Sit Down. Please remember to like or follow the show on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode, so you never forget about it.
This episode aired on March 4th, 2021, as did the previous episode.
On March 4th, 2021? What is wrong with you?
What did I say?
2021?
That's, I'm stupefied.
Are you okay?
I'm about to have surgery.
Oh, okay. Did they give you the drip now?
Like, are you prepped?
Are you
so confused?
I'm in that pre-drip life.